Hey everybody, welcome to Highly Unlikely with Josh and Janae, season 3.
Great.
We're back.
Still here, actually.
Still here. If we're wearing the same clothes as any other podcast, then
it's a batch record day.
It's great. But we have a gift for you. Some would say it's a precious gemstone that we want to give you today. And that is...
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yes.
That we're giving you the gift of Ruby Paul.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. We've just spent, you know, Ruby's been beating down the door to be on the podcast. And yeah. We're just like, Ruby, not yet. Not yet.
Let's just say Ruby brought her pen. And that's because Ruby works with numbers.
Yes, that's... Yes. That's why I have my pen.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
And she is dedicated, faithful, gets the job done, consistent.
Person.
But she does not desire a microphone in her life.
You're correct.
But so she's here for you guys.
For loving Jesus enough and us to do this.
Well, I know I told you guys that I ignored you. You know when you ignore something long enough, it usually goes away?
Yeah, we don't.
No, you didn't.
No way.
So here I am.
And sometimes going full send in our lives means that we just do things that are outside of our
lane. That's so true. You're embracing the staff value of being comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Or uncomfortable while you're uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm embracing it, but I am.
Feeling it.
I'm here.
It's great. It's great to have you. We've been very excited.
Yeah, seriously.
But we got to do the question, or we're going to keep going, and we can answer first. We do it right away. It just breaks the ice.
Yep.
Ooh, what's the last concert you went to? Shiloh band concert that made my ears bleed. Oh my goodness. If you're from, okay, I'm sorry. If you are the, oh my word. If you like the music
It's not the Shiloh concert. It's just kids.
It's just kids.
Yeah.
And it's actually beautiful, but sorry.
Where's that edit button?
You guys, do you want to know what the thing you should probably love about me most is? You don't ever have to wonder.
What you're thinking.
You don't.
It's true.
Proof. That's great.
Past 10 seconds. Okay, that was a bad joke, but that is actually the last concert I was. It was like our kids' concert.
I don't know, I'm trying to think if we went to like a music concert or something.
Was All Sons and Daughters the last one we went to?
Probably.
Oh, that was a great concert.
It was a great
concert. Have you ever heard All Sons and Daughters? It's a band. It's like a guy-girl band. I mean, just like beautiful harmonies. I don't know if they are either. Great band. Avery was one.
Really?
Yes. How about you?
You know, now that you mention it, I think I went to the Shiloh spring program. It was great.
It was great.
It was
Ruby, what's...
I'm sorry.
What's like the best music concert you ever went to?
Okay, so you can... I did go to Michael W. Smith.
Did you?
Here in Bismarck. And he had... I can't remember who he had with him. But anyway... Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Was that the same concert that ties into Brian Jackson, or was that Matthew West?
Matthew West.
Okay, never mind. That would have been cool if it tied into a different podcast episode. But
Yeah. See,
Michael W. Smith.
Ruby works with us and has worked at Evangel for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And almost every time I call her to ask her a question, I say, Ruby, turn down that K-Love.
I do like my K-Love.
I got a question. Awesome.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty often.
I've never heard you jamming.
Yeah.
Did I not call you enough?
Pretty much never not on.
Yeah, it's always really? In the background. Kind of cool.
I'm going to listen now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's several reasons that we wanted Ruby to be on this season of Highly Unlikely, because we just feel like you've lived a full sin life in some unique ways. And I think there's a crowd of people that... Even though we've made all the jokes about you being uncomfortable and stuff, but like people that don't often get spoken to that will resonate with your story, you know, or be inspired by it or helped by it. And so we did.
Or even at your bravery to do it too. Like, I should appreciate you for that.
Yeah. And so we're excited just kind of dive into your life and a couple themes that we want to draw out.
Yes.
And so.
Well, I mean, first of all, I feel like golf clap, you can add the little audio to it, of being at the same job for 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, you just don't find that anymore.
If we give out gold watches around here, you'd be getting close.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Who does that?
Isn't that, didn't that used to be an old thing?
Don't you usually get like a clock at 20, 5 or something.
And I'm off to get a clock.
You shouldn't have said that. you're gonna get some like
I will get a clock.
Like a duck comes out every hour. Yeah.
With my face stuck on it. Okay, we gotta get to business. This is too much fun.
This is too much fun.
We're going somewhere here as you listen to this podcast on your drive today.
Okay, sorry. You go with where you want to start first, I feel like.
Well, I want to just start with your story of your husband mm-hmm. and getting married and Tom, yeah. who we have all known. And mm-hmm. So you guys got married when?
Like 1984.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Like, I was just wondering, because I was thinking about like when we first met each other, he thought I was older and I thought he was younger. So
really?
That's what made me think that
yeah.
about that.
Okay, question. Sorry. So I thought you were saying Janae.
No. No. Stop. Yeah.
You just told everybody my age. Yeah.
We're all some age, right?
So you guys got married at 20.
Got married at 21.
21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we met in like October and got married in the next year in October.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you guys were both working. You had a family. What were you doing?
Tom was working at Amoco. At that time, it was Amoco Refinery. And at that time, they didn't call it administrative assistants. They called mm-hmm. them secretaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a law firm.
Yeah.
In town. And so, well, that's kind of like where we met. Tom was one of our clients.
Really?
Yeah. And so he would call often. I kind of want to look at Naomi, but he would.
We refer to the peanut gallery.
Okay, good. Because Tom was noted, you know, known for calling a lot. Mm. And I never really thought about it, but he did way back then. He would call to the office and I, you know, would answer. And that's how we got to know each other, was through the phone, you know. And then he came in once and I thought, okay.
Not bad on the end. Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah. And he must have thought kind of the same because then yeah. he called and asked me out. So
that's awesome.
And he called the lawyer and say, can I talk to your secretary, please? Would that be okay?
Yeah. Yeah. So he called a lot. Mm. So I don't know if it was because mm-hmm. of me or if he really needed to know something. I don't know.
Probably that's so weird.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. So how long were you guys married before Tom received his diagnosis?
Married in 84 and then in 1990, he was diagnosed with MS.
Okay.
Multiple sclerosis.
Yes. Yep. And so I feel like you've told this story of like how that kind of came about and even some God things within, was it maybe with your insurance or something?
Oh, well, there's an insurance matter, but it wasn't quite at that time.
Yeah.
Mm. But
how did it come about? I mean, did you start to see symptoms and then you kind of knew what was coming or it was totally out of the blue?
Well, kind of out of the blue, but kind of should have seen it coming. He would ride his bike to work. And we lived in Mandan at the time. And so it was probably to refinery? I don't know, 3-4 miles, whatever. So he rode his bike and he started getting really tired, getting tingly, you know, on his fingertips and things like that. And didn't think nothing of it, you know, just thinking he probably needs to drink more Gatorade or whatever, you know, because he's driving or riding his bike to work. And then one day he was working in the garage and he was on the ladder and he fell. And so he had to have surgery on his elbow. And so, you know, we're just kind of thinking, what the heck's going on here, you know? And then also at that time, I worked somewhere else. And there was a gal that worked there from church as well. Mm. And anyway, we were having a coffee break. And we're sitting and talking and trying to figure out, you know, what it could possibly be. And then the gal, Corrine, said, maybe he has MS. And instantly, my stomach just hit me in the stomach because Tom had a brother, had a brother that also had MS. Mm. And it had never really crossed my mind or Tom's that he had MS. And as soon as she said that, it was like, I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That moment when it like makes sense, but you don't want it to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're realizing it might.
Mm-hmm. It was just a gut punch.
Was he in his 20s?
Tom was in his early 30s.
Early 30s.
Yeah. Wow. And then, you know, I was kind of well, we thought it would be unusual to have siblings, you know, mm-hmm. have MS, but they said it was not hereditary, but genetic.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there's a difference between the two. Wow. Learned something new. Wow.
Yeah.
So you guys were raising kids at that time too, right? You had kids in the home?
At that time, 90, I was pregnant with my second.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was pregnant with Chris. And that was hard too because you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what is the future going to look like? I'm going to have babies, family, right. young family. Tom's got MS. And his brother, the way his MS went, it was really, he was paralyzed from like the neck down. Mm. And his speech was, he wasn't like that the whole time or at the very beginning, but, you know, he was progressing quickly. And so thinking about that road ahead mm-hmm. was pretty daunting.
Right.
And that turned out to be a 25 or 30 year road.
Yeah.
For you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because he was diagnosed in 90. And so that was right when Chris was born that year. In April, he was diagnosed, and then Chris was born in June. And so, yeah, Chris is now, 33? So that was 32, mm-hmm. 31, 32 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what immediately changed? What progressively changed? Yeah. I mean, how did you guys navigate that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, immediately, I think, you know, when you get a diagnosis like that, you're kind of in denial.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tom and I were both in denial.
Right.
And with MS, you know, you have exasperations. And so he would be doing okay for a while, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, he'd be dragging his leg or, you know, getting numb or something. And, you know, and then the realization is, okay, it's not gone. So then what they say too is, you know, you have exasperations, he would have attacks, and after each mm-hmm. exasperation, it would get worse. It could get worse, and usually okay. it did. So I don't think we changed anything right away, you mm-hmm. know, just kind of tried to go on with life.
Mm-hmm. How long was from like diagnosis to where then it started to become where you were bridging into caretaker in a way?
You know, I can just picture Tom, but I can't really remember the year. Mm-hmm. I think I would say we went about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. About 10 years. You know, managing, doing pretty well. But, you know, Tom went through the stages of, you know, having to put a brace on his foot because he had drop foot.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went to, like, a cane because, mm-hmm. you know, he needed a cane. And then we went to a walker. And then we went to a manual wheelchair. And then mm-hmm. ended up in an electric wheelchair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we got to go through all those lovely steps. And those are hard. I mean, for a man and a woman, right. but particularly, I think, a man
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
to go through.
So in what ways through watching Tom walk through this, in what ways did he live a full sin life? And yeah. what did you see in him?
Especially once he had to give up maybe his career.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, you know, yeah. some of those I mean, liberties he had to retire early.
Mm-hmm.
And which meant he was home.
Right.
And so that was another thing we had to work through, you know, at an early age, because he was home now. I'm sorry, what was the question? I kind of got...
Just, like, we're talking about full sin, like you just
Tom.
Commit and, yeah.
Yeah, Tom. You know, initially it was hard and... You know, he got to a place where really he was wondering, and getting mad at God, what is my purpose, really? I can't do this. I can't do that. What is my purpose? And then just have to think about the progression of this because, but then as time went on, you know, he'd be home and salespeople would call on the phone and then he was leading them to Christ, you know, that kind of thing. And so he found his purpose, or if anyone came to the house, they probably didn't leave the same way.
Right.
What was his question? He had a question, didn't he?
If you would die today, do you know if you're going to heaven?
Yeah.
Or do you know where you're going? That was kind of his big question. But, I mean, that was a process before we got there. But I think, too, it's just his attitude. You know, when you have a diagnosis like that and you look down the road and you think, this is not something that's going to get better. It's only going to get worse. He had a great attitude, you know, about it. And kind of like he was just filled with joy and the Holy Spirit and, you know, and that was a huge blessing because, you know, if he would have been hard to live with or any of that, I don't know how long. You know, I could have kept taking care of him.
How this honestly question just popped in my head as you were talking, and both of you being believers, how did you, and even still, but live in that tension of knowing the God you believe in, who's a healer, and we believe in miracles, and living in the reality of what you see. Like, what did that feel like? What did that look like?
Well, I'm just going to say that Tom, he just thought he could be healed at any moment, at any time. And I would just look at him and just marvel because here I'm sitting, I'm not in the wheelchair, I'm not where you're at, and I'm just marveling at how he felt about that because don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't believe God doesn't heal, because I do, but I just didn't think it was really in the cards for us. You know? Yeah. Because we went so long and, you know, we tried so many different things to, you know, put his MS into remission, and it just didn't work. And so I just,
I just don't understate I mean, there's people that their spouse receives a diagnosis like this and they think, I didn't sign up for this, you know, and they leave, or, you know, they're done. And from our perspective, you were the total opposite, you know, where I know Tom would call, you know, or you would have to run home for stuff, you know, things would come up that people from the outside would be like, well, that's inconvenient, you know? But it seems like you hunkered down and just said, hey, we're in this. This is like, you know, we're doing this together all the way through, you know? And even to the point near the end of Tom's life where I remember him kind of struggling in the hospital and you stepped out for 1 second, said a couple words to me, went to the bathroom, and then I heard him kind of call for you, and I saw you come out of the bathroom back around the corner. He said, I'm coming, I'm here, you know? And I just have these little moments from those weeks that I feel like so embodied who you are and embodied your story up to that point. And that was the moment where I thought, this is not just something Ruby's doing. This is who she is. I get her now, and I get their marriage and the joy and the cost of a diagnosis. Or not the joy of a diagnosis, but the joys that you still experience together and finding those, but then also the very real cost of that, you know? And so I just don't want people to, I want to state how challenging and how difficult and how disruptive, I'm doing air quotes, but this all was. And even when it comes, you know, over the course of 25 years, I just respect you, you know,
thank you
for your resiliency, you know, and love.
And I think we thought of you and we talked about Full Send, because it's like, that's full send. I'm all in. Like, I'm here. I'm committed. I'm all in till the end. And that's you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, but I will say that, you know, during the whole course of the time we were together, it's not that I didn't have thoughts of, oh my gosh, can I do this? Like, mm-hmm. and from a lot of different perspectives, like, can I do it even physically?
Right.
You know, that way. And then mentally, you know, I think I had a lot of, just so everybody knows that this is okay, but I had a lot of mini breakdowns. Mm-hmm. You know, you just go in the room and you break down. Mm-hmm. And then you pull yourself together and off you go again. And mm-hmm. that I did that a lot. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of those moments. And, you know, I always thought too of, if I were Tom, you know, how would I feel? You know, he's got to have a ton of insecurities. Like, is my family going to leave? Is she going to mm-hmm. leave? I mean, and there's all of that in there. So there's just a lot of emotions mm-hmm. going on, but And there was a point where I lived on Tom's, his, like, one day he just couldn't walk. Mm. And then I'm just a basket case.
Yeah.
And I used to live on how, every day on how he was doing. And I finally had to give that up to God and right. say, I can't do this anymore. You just, you know, I just have to go on living and doing what I can do. And so that helped immensely. And that was kind of like early on, you mm-hmm. know, when he was diagnosed, like just all of a sudden everything was just, you know, things were starting to get worse and worse. And my attitude too was like, oh my goodness. But then you get to a point where this was really hard is when the kids are older and they're starting to leave the house mm. and you're in the empty nest. Mm. And it's like, oh boy.
Right.
You know, here we are. And that was challenging too, very challenging. And when I thought about what other people were doing at my age, mm-hmm. you know, that was kind of like their new right. second life, or I don't know what you want to call it. Right. They're going off yeah. doing this, doing that. And, you know, and I'm thinking ahead, okay, well, this, you know, our life, it's only going to get more challenging. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard. And so that was, you know, so I started thinking about what if Tom gets really bad and, you know, I'm not able to take care of him. You know, where, you know, what does that look like? And so I did go through a few years yeah. like that. And again, I just told God he had to take care of it. And I can't worry about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. How did the Lord, how did the Lord strengthen you? Like, I feel like I could sit and listen to you talk about, I'm sure you had such intimate, beautiful moments with the Lord. Because the Lord saw every breakdown and others didn't. No. And how did you feel him strengthening you or taking the burden off or...
I don't like? Know specifically, except that, you know, we made it through. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that, you know, I knew Tom didn't ever want to go into a nursing home. And the thought of putting him in one just killed me, you know. So so even when we were in the hospital at the end there, you know, I said to Tom, you know, we did it. We made it. Mm. So that's, yeah.
There's a story from those moments.
From what?
We were like, we're going to cry. This is just going to be when we cry.
It's fine. It's okay. There's a story from being in the hospital and coming to the realization that Tom was probably going to go home. And he made a comment about his shoes.
Yeah. You know, when Tom, when the accident happened and we were in the hospital, and this is so bizarre because anytime Tom would go into the hospital, like for a UTI or something, I always thought, you know, he's probably not going to make it home. Whatever, whatever. And then we have this car accident, and it doesn't even cross my mind that we go to the hospital and he's got 5 broken bones,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't even cross my mind that he's potentially not coming home.
Mm.
And, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, we're trying to figure out to get a new handicap van, because that was another thing. I don't know where my mind was, but I'm thinking we got to get this fixed. Well, they totaled it. You know, I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So then we're in the hunt for a new van, because I'm thinking, how am I going to get Tom home from the hospital without a, you know, our handicapped van? And right. So all these things are going through my mind. And then my son kind of shocked me into reality. And he says, Mom, do you really think he's coming home?
Mm.
And that was like the first time I realized, like, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's coming home. And I know, too, Tom, when we were in the hospital, too, he said, Ruby, am I going to make it through this? And this was at the beginning. And I'm so, yeah, you know, we're going to make it. But I said, it's going to be a long road, because I'm mm-hmm. thinking, you know, he's not going to come home right away. He's going to have to, you know, do rehab or go to a facility and,
yeah.
you know, all this thing. And I'm just like, yeah, we're going to make it home. And then as time went on, you know, his condition just got worse and worse and worse. And after talking to the doctors, they, you know, just came to a conclusion that it wasn't going to get any better. And so I knew that at the beginning, Tom wasn't ready, really. I mean, he loved God and he was all in, but he wasn't ready. And it was kind of amazing how in those 9 short days that he came from one place to the other, because we talked, we had a talk. I talked with him and I said, Tom, you know, I think we would, you know, we should just take you home and keep you comfortable and then we can all be together. Because this was during COVID mm-hmm. where you had the 2 people rule or whatever it was. And it was, you know, you could only have 2 people in the room and it was just like, are you kidding me? And I said, would you be okay if, you know, we just brought you home, made you comfortable? He said, absolutely. And I just about died when he said that. Yeah, he had come full circle. And when he said that, I just like, oh my gosh, do you know how much love, respect I had for that man? I mean, my gosh, to come to that at that time was insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, I can't remember. I went home that night because you couldn't stay overnight because of COVID. You couldn't stay. So I went home that night and talked to the kids and told them that, you know, I talked to Dad and, you know, this is what he said. And then I can't remember what exactly it was, but I thought, oh, the next morning. Well, I thought the next morning when I go to see him, you know, is he going to change his mind? And so, you know, I went back in and I said, Tom, remember what we talked about yesterday? And I said, you know, is that still what you want? And he said, absolutely. So yeah, he was ready.
Mm.
Oh, and then about the shoes. I'm so sorry. I went all the way around just to get to that. Yeah, that was the point where when he was still, you know, still could talk and knew what was going on, he had asked to put his shoes on because he wanted, can't say exactly what was going on in his mind, but he wanted to get his shoes and get ready to go.
Because he had been in a wheelchair for a long time?
Long time.
And he planned on walking into heaven?
Yeah.
No. I hadn't heard that.
It's pretty amazing.
I am Noelle about this podcast. Why did you put me right by Ruby? I don't know why there's not a box of Kleenexes right here. So I think too, in college, I cared for, as a PT student, there was a lady with MS and she would pay very minimally PT students to come and help keep her with exercises because they didn't have insurance and things. So I just got to know her and her husband so dearly well. And so I just watched her walk through a lot of the same things. And yeah, so it hits deeper too of just understanding and seeing in a intimate level of someone's home too and patience and then just knowing and loving you guys. I'm a bottle of emotions today. So
yeah. If you're listening and not watching, it's kind of like a dam holding back the water right now.
I've made some weird noises that I'm sure I'm just going to have to edit out. I think it was like, oh, goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing all of that. I remember when Tom went home to be with Jesus and we were doing the memorial. I have like snapshots of moments through those days. And I've just thought about your life some, you know, and it seems like especially over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of women in our church who have lost their husbands.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
of kind of a lot of different age groups, actually.
Yeah.
And so I remember processing that of just, man, Ruby is quite young. And
thank you,
you're
by
welcome.
The way.
You are.
But I mean, realistically, you know, 30, 40 years of life left could be a real thing, you know, and you processed losing a spouse and potentially having that much space left in front of you. And what is that like, you know, and how do you process through that? And we were even talking about the word widow, you know, and it's like a hard word because you almost,
Can you tell me why you don't like it?
I just don't like the word. I was in Grief Share and, you know, we talked about that too, how we just don't like that word. And I don't really have an explanation except, you know, I kind of looked it up.
Did you?
Yes.
A little research?
I did a little research after you and I talked. And this is, so the widow, the obvious one, of course. But then there's one that says, a last word or short last line of a paragraph falling at the top of a page or column and considered undesirable.
Oh my gosh. I don't like that word anymore either.
Well, it's not talking about a human.
Well, no, it's not. So, but anyway, I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that. But
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like such a harsh word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this too. It's like you're male, female, or widow. You know, anyway, just kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's so, you're so defined, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that was kind of my point, even in stuff we want to talk to you about, because you see people who walk through that. And I don't even mean this, and I hope this is the right way to say it, but it's almost like they either have to make a decision to keep on living or some don't. In fact, I think there's some statistics that, especially with elderly people that have been dependent on each other for a long time, that it's like 8 months or something generally when they pass away, because there is that loss.
Just that loneliness.
And and you can really just, I think they're just from knowing, being at the bedside when people have passed away or processing with people when they're sick and realizing that death is an interesting thing that we can't control, but there is a point where people almost come to where absolutely, you know, and they're like, I'm gonna, like Jesus said, God, I give up my spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. that's a real thing.
That
you know,
is a real thing.
So some of the, like what I wanted to emphasize is I've met some people who have walked through loss and then I'm amazed at how they continue to keep living. Like they almost reinvent themselves and get a new lease on life and realize, hey, I'm still here. And Pastor Diane is one I talk about a lot, you know, that
she's great.
Her life with her husband was amazing and they led in a lot of different ways. And it's like, she walked through that loss and then she said, well, now what do I do? And then she was like, back in the year, you know, and she drove forward. And so I think what I wanted, there's a picture because I watched as your family walked up to your husband's casket and said goodbye to him for the last time, closed the casket, which is, to me, out of any memorial, any moment in the memorial, that is the hardest moment. you know, and it's before the service. So by the time a family's walking in, they're raw, you know, because that's what they've just experienced, which maybe we need to rethink how we do that. But I watched you in that moment and your whole family was huddled around. And I think I have a picture. And then you step back. I saw you like straighten your shoulders.
I remember that time.
You pulled your shirt a little bit and took a deep breath, and your kids are all still gathered around. And it was almost like your moment of, again, it was like, this is Ruby. Like, this is hard. Maybe I feel a certain way, but I am going to pick up and be strong and move forward. And there's a kind of strength that people have that is avoiding pain, you know, which I don't think is the kind of strength that you have, but there's a kind of strength people have where they say, this is hard, but I'm going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
A persevering.
I think everybody that goes through that goes through different levels or different feelings. And but, you know, when Tom died, you know, you just, you kind of lose who you are. And I think that's with anyone who loses someone, you lose who you are. You're not a wife any longer. You're not a caretaker. Like, I was a huge caretaker, you know, and that was a big part of my life. So, yeah, you just kind of feel like you're floundering and you wonder, what is my purpose? What is my purpose? And you think you want to get it all figured out in the first year. I don't know why that is. You just think, I need to figure this out. I need, you know, what I've learned is I don't have to figure it. I didn't. And I got shortly after the funeral, one of my cousins sent me a devotional. And through the whole thing, all it said was, be still. And I thought, thank you, because I can do that. And I think I need to just be still and kind of figure it out. And but, you know, I can be still for a long time. So it's like, how long do I get to be still? I have to figure this out. So the first year is really hard. And that first year anniversary is just insane. You try to not let it get to you. You know, you know what's coming and you try not to let it get to you, but
it just was does. It December?
Right, December 9th.
Okay. How has that changed Christmas the past couple years?
So December of 21, yeah, that was really, really hard. It was like I just didn't really want to do Christmas, right? Except, you know, we had grandchildren.
Right.
And so you do it because you have grandchildren.
Yeah.
Last year, much, much better. I mean, it was much better.
I mean, that was a very, I would say, ignorant question. I'm like, of course it's changed. I think, too, when I've lost people, that whole month is just different. The season, it's like, this reminds me of that, you know? So, December's will never be the same.
December's will never be the same. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to sound morbid, but my
reality.
My brother passed away in December, and my nephew died, like, what, two weeks after Tom, you know, he was 38, 39. So it was just, it was crazy. It was just crazy. Yeah.
How have you, I kind of asked you about this question, but how have you kept your eyes on the future? I mean, how have you over the course of time been able to shift that gaze? Are you still in the midst of it? You know, what is it like to process through that?
I'm just going to say I'm very thankful for family.
Yeah.
And very thankful for my job and you guys. My church family is just huge, always has been a huge part of my life, and Tom's. So just so very thankful that I have that, because that's kind of where it's at right now. My kids, my grandkids coming to work. I like coming to work.
How do you like coming to work after 30
Wait,
years?
Wait, don't go there. I'll ask one more question.
Josh had a plan.
There's a beautiful piece of God's poetry in the middle of this story that we haven't talked about yet, is that on the 25th anniversary of Disney, right? Or of the park?
The 25th. Well, it depends where you're going.
What do you have a pin for?
Oh, the 50th, right? I just went to their 50th.
But weren't you there at the 25th?
I was there at the 25th.
Who are you there with?
Tom.
Before diagnosis, after?
It was after diagnosis.
So you guys got to go to Disney together
and
experience that on the 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
The next 25 years, you walked through everything you just described. And then after Tom passed away, you walked through a lot of that. You hadn't traveled.
No, we didn't travel a lot. It was difficult to travel.
Yes.
And you hadn't been on a plane for a long time, right?
A long time, yeah.
Yeah, and then I remember your family was going to go on this trip to Disney and you were going to go with.
Yeah, they invited me to go with.
And so you got on the plane.
Got on the plane.
Flew to Disney and you came back and you had a 50th anniversary pin.
Right.
Wow.
And I just think maybe nobody thinks anything of that. But I think sometimes it's the poetry of God and he marks seasons in
our
lives.
That is kind of weird, isn't it? The 25th and then the 50th that they asked me to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were there for those two anniversaries. And in the middle of all of that was everything that you just described that you walked through. And I think God marks seasons of our lives in funny ways. Obviously, God is into marking seasons. You know, he put dates on the calendar and time on the clock. And and to me, it was just such a cool thing.
Yeah, it was. I did tell my grandson, Blake, that I probably wouldn't be there for the next 25th.
You know? I'm not counting you out. I'm not counting you out.
You got to get that pin, Ruby.
Yeah. Got to make it. Till I'm 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that was great. That was a great trip. It was fun.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Okay. Last thing that we want to ask you about as we close.
Okay.
But you've been at the same job.
She said she still likes it.
And she still likes it.
I think that's a miracle in and of itself.
Yeah. And we're her bosses and she's thankful for us.
I am so very thankful. You.
But who knows more about finance though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so you the know thing that, about maybe. Ruby's job in the church is she does see finance and spending and like it's a job with a ton of view. Like she sees what's going on in the life of the church probably with a closer microscope than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she has also been here 30 years. So she's been through
how many pastors?
Four pastors, five pastors?
I don't know. Should I say them all out?
I mean,
We came here when Pastor Houston.
Yes, sir.
So Pastor Houston, Pastor Thornton,
Dwelly,
Pastor Dwelly, Graham.
Us.
Five. Yeah, five.
And so you've seen a lot of different philosophy, a lot of different emphasis on what's important in the church, a lot of different changes. You've seen full staff teams come and go. Mm-hmm. And what?
Seriously?
And
I knew this, but now I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And you're here. And you're here not because you're good at your job, but that is not always what keeps somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a right heart, you know, right attitude, a heart for the Lord, a consistency and faithfulness. And so how?
Okay, just get it out there. Like,
just get it out there.
But how do you have such a grand view and not always getting a vote or a voice into some things and still keep a right heart? Because I think there's people that are going to work places where they see things they don't like and there's other options. Like you can backstab, you can gossip, you can quit, you can, you know, have an anarchy. Like there's different things that you can do. And there's people going to their jobs right now who are listening to this who are in the throes of that or they don't like changes that are happening or they see things that they don't like that they don't have a voice into. And how do you keep a right attitude or a right perspective in the midst of that?
You know, of all people, how much I love change. Okay.
Insert sarcasm?
But
do you know this about me that I actually don't speak sarcasm? I'm very poor at it. Superintendent Winston and I is very funny because he is very good at speaking sarcasm.
I have to interpret this language of sarcasm.
He does. I said sarcasm, right? Yeah, that's sarcasm. Okay, sarcasm.
Here's how much Ruby likes change. She had her pen in her hair when she sat down at the table and she wanted to keep it there because it's consistent and it's usually there. So
it was
just a case in point.
Okay, well, so that was just There was a lot in that question
yeah.
that I was thinking
if
of
you could as answer you were it all talking, in 25 words or less. Then.
Oh, boy. Gosh.
Sarcasm.
So the change thing, you know, I don't like change. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think as much as I've gone through it, I was thinking the other day, I think I've gotten good at it.
Mm. Right. You have to.
Well, I mean, you have to. You can't have the attitude you had back then and keep it all the way through and be the same person.
Yeah.
And, you know, enjoy what you're doing. So anyway, yeah, there's been a lot of people that have come and gone through the door, but with that, I have to back up. My job wasn't, it's never really been the same, like from when I started
right.
to where I am now. Mm-hmm. There was just a lot of things in between that changed. I mean, I started out in that back room where Pastor Bryce is. Mm-hmm. It used to be called the Sunday school room. So that's where I started. I only came part-time. I'd come and write about 10 checks and off I went. And then got a little bit more and I ended up in the conference room. Mm-hmm. And there was a desk in there and that was where I worked for a little bit. And then eventually I migrated to the office. And so during all that time, everything that I did was just a little, you know, everything just changed. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's very helpful in a job. Mm-hmm. You're not doing the same, like, mm-hmm. you know, same thing every day. So that was good. Mm-hmm. The people were exceptional. Why are you laughing?
Because you're clicking your pen. And you're not going to click your pen.
She before the podcast said, I can't hold my pen or I'm going to click it. And I just...
I just looked at the sound guy and he's like...
like, she needs to knock that off. Here, I'll hold it the other way.
Oh, okay. The answer you're giving was really good, too.
Was it so good?
Yeah, no, I lost my train of thought. Oh, but anyway. So I've worked with a lot of different people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And even during the course of that, they were all very understanding of our situation. Mm-hmm. So like when Tom would call mm-hmm. and I'd have to drop everything, which I did a lot, I would drop and I'd be gone and I would go home and help Tom do whatever he needed. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I'd come back. So they were everybody's been very understanding. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to work here that way. You can't do that at every job where right. you can just drop everything and go. So that helped me stay, of course. I know there's a lot to that question.
Well, no, and I think we just talked about like it is just having a right heart and a right perspective. And
well, there's no way you could have been in this job for that long without you growing as the church has grown.
Right. Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
I think that just speaks to you.
And I think too, you know, God places people at a place at the right time when it's mm-hmm. needed. And so when, you know, someone came in and, you know, things changed, you know, I think that's. Right. You know, that's God's calling, and that's,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm not one of those visionary people. I'm not like, so if God puts someone in and this is what they want to do, and they tell me what I need to do, and it's like, okay, I can do that. So that's about.
Well, the visionary people are successful because of people like you, because if it was just the visionary people, we would just dream
be
about
up in
things.
A hot air balloon, but not know how to get back down.
I mean, the true answer is a lot of K-Love.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Just keeping right. That's K-Love what boils all down to.
Rolling. Is K-Love. So.
Yeah. I think this, I saw this question. Oh, are you going to say something else? Saw this question and maybe a great way to end it, but this could be for what you walk through with Tom and just your life or with staying committed in a job through change and because you're gifted or in your sweet spot. What would you say to people who are maybe in a similar situation today, any advice or words of encouragement?
You know, I can only say what I went through and what helped me because everybody's got their own thing to walk through or it's always different. But for Tom and I, with the diagnosis of MS, you know, it just gets worse and worse. And so you kind of know where that road is going. And for me, it was truly one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds very cliche, but that is really mm-hmm. that is really true. Cause that sometimes Tom lived with a lot of pain. So truly sometimes not even a day at a time. It's just like
right.
hours or let's just get through the night, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the thing I have written in the kitchen is joy comes in the morning. So every morning you just start out with a new perspective, a new hope, and a new, it's going to be a better day. Right. And, you know, we had a lot of good days.
Yes.
But there were hard days. But that was me. We couldn't plan too much, you know, kind of just had to seize the day, I guess, is kind of what we did.
Yeah.
C'est la vie. Isn't that the seize the day thing?
I have no idea. No. I speak English. Yes? I don't know, Josh.
All right. Ruby, you're amazing. And I know you're nervous for this, but you settled right in and that was so good.
Did it feel more comfortable once you started going?
Well, I told Naomi I went through a lot of different levels, you know, the ignoring part. That worked for a while. And then
3 seasons to me.
And then Josh, then got me to commit. And then it was you just forgetting about it. And then, now it was then today it was okay, let's do it. I told Naomi, it was giving birth to a baby. Let's just get it done.
Well, you know, you delivered. Note, so
yay.
There you go.
You delivered.
See?
Good. You made it through. It was awesome. Yeah. I think it's going to encourage many. So thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you guys for asking me. That's I am honored that you actually thought of me.
Yep. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This has been the gem that is Ruby Paul.
And yes.
We're so glad that you joined us for this episode of Highly Unlikely with Josh. Highly Unlikely with Josh and Janine.
Oh my goodness.
If you appreciate this podcast, you can subscribe, share with friends, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.